Hi, and welcome to Night Clerk Radio, episode 29, Video Game Vaporwave? Who would have thought there'd be such a connection between video games and vaporwave?
Not I.
Hi, Burke. How are you doing?
All right, Ross. How are you?
Very good. Very excited. Mm-hmm. We started voting for the April bonus episode for our patrons, available at patreon.com/nightclerkradio. And Future Funk is currently in the lead by a lot. So that sounds like it's going to be our next bonus episode topic. And I quite enjoy Future Funk. Berg, how excited on a scale of 1 to 10 are you?
All right. Now, I never should have said I don't like Future Funk that much. I'm excited to talk about it because I think these episodes are generally a good excuse to like confront your opinions about stuff. So I'm, of course, excited to talk about it. I think maybe just reevaluate that because I haven't really paid attention to it in like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, certainly. One of the things I want to really kind of explore is Future Funk is considered a subgenre of vaporwave, but it's so different than a lot of vaporwave. Like, I really want to like, how did this happen? What? Why? Because, you know, it's obviously so disco influenced. It's so influenced by Japanese city pop. I guess it might be the Japanese.
Yeah.
So that's something we'll be interrogating in our bonus episode. We should be recording sometime in April. So that's something to look forward on our Patreon. Of course, our first episode, Synthwave, is already out, so be sure to check that out. But we are talking about Vaporwave today, and specifically video game Vaporwave. Our two artists are Vaporwave producers that have gone really heavy in the video game aesthetic, and a very particular type of video game. I would say the sort of console JRPG of the 16-bit era, sort of like the center of this Venn diagram.
Mm-hmm.
I like both these artists. I've been aware of them for a while now. And before we get dive into the specific artists, Burke, what did you think?
Yeah, I like this. So I was not as familiar with them. I had definitely heard of Equip before, but I had not heard of R23X, even though I feel like I've seen the artwork around, like showed up in mixes or whatever. But yeah, I really like this. I think it's really interesting because, you know, we've talked about video game music previously. We had the episode with Night of Terror and Pleasant Spectre soundtracks, which is really like a Hauntology meta thing. You know, these are soundtracks or stuff that doesn't exist. And whoa, isn't that like, ooh, weird, like the Spectre stuff that doesn't exist. And then we did actual soundtracks with Bridget, where we just talked about some great survival horror soundtracks. This is interesting because it's a vaporwave, or at least adjacent. I think they span a lot of genres. You know, vaporwave is maybe not a sufficient descriptor, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, genre is a marketing thing.
Totally, totally.
Yeah, so you mentioned Equip, and Equip, I feel, could also fit into synth pop or synth wave. That's what the album we're going to be talking about. So
it's just interesting that you're really just taking the like sensation of playing games, and then the sampling base is all video game music or sound effects, if there is one. You know, a lot of it is also composed. It's just interesting. I just said in my show notes, I was like, oh, we're just replacing Diana Ross with Nobuo Uematsu.
Yeah, I could see that. So our other artist, R23X, I've actually been aware of for quite some time because back in like 2015, just as I was getting into Vaporwave, on Tumblr, R23X offered, you know, the first 5 or 10 people who responded, I'll send you a VHS tape of my first music video. And I was like, okay. And I got one. So I have that VHS tape. It's for MP3 sound.torrent. Again, great album names here.
Yes.
But yeah, it's the same kind of aesthetic. One thing that came up before we get into the specifics, I think both of these albums, I kind of see a connection between lo-fi hip hop and a lot in this music, in the sense that I feel like both of these are kind of music of the grind. And I'm trying to get a little more into theory or whatever, but, you know, per hour listen, like for many people in our generation, video game music obviously tops the list because we've played so many video games. That music, you just hear it over and over again because a lot of video games have you work or grind. You know, you have to do these relatively simple things to earn enough resources or whatever in order to advance to more challenging parts of the game. And then lo-fi hip hop, like, how did that get started? Beats to work study by, like, in other words, grinding, but in real life. It's something I'll interrogate further in future episodes, but it's something to think about. Like, I think there's sort of this underlying message of like, you gotta grind. You gotta grind for fun. You gotta grind for to survive in real life. And yep. But yeah, it's both of these are very, very fun albums.
Yeah, I do think that's an interesting point about pure volume of music listened to just by video game. It's a totally normie response, but God, like the world music and the sunken Gilnica music from FF7 are mm-hmm. like absolutely burned into my brain just from running around and farming like sources. You want to max out all your stats, you got to run around.
That's the thing is like a lot of us do find comfort in doing these kind of things. Like, you know, it is a grind, but it's like a pleasurable grind because you can kind of lose yourself in it. Mm-hmm. Instead of being like boring work, you're in an epic fantasy world. And like, it's about the vista and the environment and being immersed in that environment. And the music helps to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So even if it is a relatively simple thing, you know, grinding for... you know, gold or whatever. It's soothing rather than draining. Mm-hmm. So anyway, why don't we get into our first album?
That was a little bit from the track Dry Summer, which is track 11 off the album OST(1.rar), because you mm-hmm. got more than one version of the OST RAR on your hard drive, and Windows needs to keep track of those files. So this is the debut album from, as you said, R23X, self-proclaimed beatmaker from the Mist Continent, but actually a musical project of the graphic artist and visual artist, Mark Junker, mm-hmm. who has been doing this for a long time, like 7 or 8 years now, because this album came out in 2014. It was the debut album of the project and then had a vinyl re-release in like 2019, which sort of confused me. I didn't realize it was so old. It's kind of interesting. It's really back in the era of like OG Vaporwave. Mm-hmm. But I love his origin story. I found an interview with vinylwritermusic.com, which is a great interview. It's going to be in the show notes. Definitely read it. But he's like, so I'll just quote him. In like 2012 or 2013, I found a cardboard box of VHS tapes on the side of the street in the rain. Sitting on top of the pile was a tape with FF7 Eris Death Scene scrawled in mechanical pencil on the label. And he went through all these VHS and they were all just rips of PS1 era cutscenes. So like FF7, FF8. All of these cutscenes, and he was just fell in love with the aesthetic of like these old beat up warbly VHS that he started a Tumblr called VHS Stills and would post them and like post visual art based on them. And then that took off in the Vaporwave community for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, this music's cool. I'll try making music. I like making music. And that's how it happened. It transitioned over into the track Dry Summer, which is the one of the first ones that he wrote for this album.
Yeah, I quite like that track. I do like in this progression of the album, it seems to get gradually more glitchy and like things are breaking down like a VHS tape in the rain, you know, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. the game's breaking down, the album's breaking down. It's just like the transitory nature of, you know, pleasant summer memories. They just don't last. They just get hazier and hazier the longer you're removed from them. So
what's interesting is they also become more mature. Like the tracks are not in the order he wrote them, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean like he got better at writing music, but like, we'll say the first side of this vinyl or the first half of this album is also like really short, just like beat loops almost. Mm-hmm. A lot of like minute 50 tracks that are almost, again, we say genre is dumb in a marketing term, but I'm like, is this almost like Vapor Trap, but with video games? Because it's just like a beat tape. It's great. Mm-hmm. And then the back half, though, like Dry Summer and the track after Adventure stand out to me because they have much more pronounced melodic elements. I don't know if they're sampled or composed. I actually was really surprised that the who sampled for this album like doesn't exist.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at that as well. I thought this album's been around for a while and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fairly popular. I mean, it got a vinyl release, so.
Yeah, it's very popular. But it's also interesting is that maybe segues into another thing I was thinking about, though, is that while I was listening to all these beat mixes and everything, I actually didn't care where it was sampled from or if it was even sampled. A lot of these albums, I get real obsessed with like, oh, I know that song. Oh, I know that song. Oh, what's that R&B song? And this one, I just sort of was vibing with it. Like, yeah, it's just, it really just becomes its own thing.
It definitely does. It goes through a lot of these genres, but in a really interesting way. I mean, I also had like Vapor Trap in my notes, especially right at the beginning. You know, it's mimicking the journey of a JRPG. You start out, you're the hero, you got to go and do the thing and, you know, fight the bosses. And but like by the end, most JRPGs, they start getting philosophical, like, you know.
And that's the melancholic track that comes in.
You find out the boss is your childhood friend who's gone a different path. And like, can you kill your only friend, the only person in the world who understood you? Or, you know, there's a sense of melancholy, especially in the later tracks. And this kind of haziness, like, like in track 13, Emotional Trip Hop, weirdly enough, has these sort of like looped vocal samples, kind of add like a very hypnotic feel to the track.
I agree. I love that track. I actually want to play a little bit of it because it's an example of the wide range of genres. I have a few samples I want to play that highlight that. So here's a bit from Emotional Trip Hop. Even feel video gamey to me in the same way. It really feels like really, really great glitchy lo-fi. And I just, oh man, it's just really.
This album isn't so much about video games. It's about the experience of playing video games, especially a video game that actually has an emotional impact to the player. I think people who would relate to this album, you know, if you've played a video game and maybe you beat it at an odd time of day, like after school or work, or you're tired and you just suddenly realize, oh my God, this is happening. Oh no, I thought the game was going to be about this, but it's really about that. Then it's over. And you're like, yeah, you're just left at as the credits roll. You're like, oh shit. The satisfaction of beating a tough boss. And then, you know, that wistful melancholy about, oh, I can't play it anymore. Even if I play it again, it's not the same because I can't play it the first time.
That's interesting now that I'm thinking about that, just thinking about the progression of this album, because, you know, the second album we'll do is very different, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is interesting because, like, the first half, all the track names are, of course, like, New Area with Difficult Enemies and Collect XP and AP, Learn Counter Attack Ability, Awkward Stealth Level. And then kind of, yeah, after that, it just transitions into a very different feel. And I agree, because I think it's self-described by him as deconstructing the oral experience of a video game.
Yeah, I think like one of the last tracks, I mean, there are a couple of bonus tracks at the very end, but like track 14, Melancholic, the guitar is very satisfactory, but then they have these rocket burners. Give it like, like you're on the airship blasting off as you watch, you know, the castle of the boss crumble or whatever.
I also like that the track after that in the 2019 re-release is Call to Adventure, Leave the Village. Which I like to imagine it is at the end because it's sequel bait.
Yeah.
It may have meant to have been earlier, like in previous drafts of the album, but I like that it's at the end now because I'm like, oh, you know, I thought I beat the boss, but
yeah, you got to do New Game Plus to get the true ending.
Of course. How could I be so foolish?
Like, weirdly enough, I was just talking to a friend who said, oh, I just beat Nier Automata. And it's just like, what ending did you get? Oh, I got this ending. Well, that's not the real ending. You know, there's like 5-10 hours left of the game. You're not done with it, right? You should really get the real ending. Oh, okay.
And, you know, Nier itself, which I always joke, is like the spinoff of the fifth ending of some other game. Like, it's not even... It's like a spinoff of the non-prime continuity of a different game series. And it's just, man, those games are crazy.
They really are. And this album is really a change of pace for us because it's short. It's like not even half an hour.
But it's so good for how short it is. Like, I always feel bad because I always talk about media and like I compliment it for being short, which feels insulting. Like, oh, it's great because it doesn't last very long. But that's not like what I mean at all. I just love media that knows what it wants to be and just does it. Yeah. And sometimes that does involve being a 2-hour ambient album, right? That's sometimes necessary. But I love, and this is something I discussed in my notes, is that I think actually I like that a lot of the track lengths are fairly short. I think some of them would wear out their welcome of sort of sound effect barragement if everything was like a 4.5 minute track, you know? Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of these, that minute and a half is perfect to get everything, mm-hmm. get the complete idea of what they're trying to do. In like a really good way.
It's the opposite, I guess, of the movie soundtrack problem that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the movie soundtrack has to cover this linear story. And so it's like, there's some really nice, I really like this. But then there's the track that has to do the cover, the comedic relief or the monster kills, rising action kind of thing. And it's like listening to that in the middle of it, like, oh, this spooky house. Okay, this is kind of weird. And oh, God, the monster just killed somebody. Okay, I didn't need that in the middle of my soundtrack.
My sting.
So, yeah, this is kind of the opposite of that, because even though it is like kind of like a soundtrack, I mean, it's labeled OST for original soundtrack. It is very consistent about about the mood of the overall game, not trying to cover the specific thing, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh, here's the casino level music, which is totally gaudy and glitzy and out of place with everything else. It's just focusing on the mood, not the obnoxious minigame music, for example.
Yeah. So I think I do want to have one extra sample just to give people an idea of these types of like beat mixes that are common through the first half of the album. This is actually a track I mentioned before, New Area with Difficult Enemies, track 2. And yeah, it's just this like beat barrage of video game sound effects. And I think if anything that you've heard of interested you, then you'll probably dig this album. I really like this as an example of blend of genres, because it does have a lot of that Blunderphonic sampling, but it is in a more trappy beat tape type environment. And just the production is so good. Like, there's so many layers going on. I also just really like that kind of intricate production, because I know that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, there's also like elements of lo-fi, because like it has that, you know, low production VHS kind of, like, very faintly, but you can definitely detect it. And there's also chiptune elements to it as well. Mm-hmm. So like,
yes. Thank you. I meant to say chiptunes. So
it's a fun listen. Definitely put it on your rotation if you too want to remember better times of being at home with nothing better to do than to play Final Fantasy whatever for 10 hours a day.
Beat Final Fantasy 3 for the 10th time.
Was the part of track 1 of Cursebreaker X from a quip, and that is track 1 is called the Cursebreaker X theme. So I picked a part with a sort of a harmonica coming in, synthesized harmonica coming in, because it really, I mean, the whole track is a banger, but like, oh God, I just love that little bit of just adding that extra wistfulness in there. We're going out on an epic journey, gang, you know, I can almost see them off now on their quest. So a quip is another Vaporwave artist who's picked up quite a bit in the last couple of years. He has collaborated with R23X a couple of times. So yeah, Kevin Hine is a very prolific Vaporwave artist. He actually has a Patreon where you can get a mix every month of Vaporwave music. And initially for this selection, I want to give a big honorable mention to Townsoft Volume 1, which is available as one of his Patreon mixes to backers, which is the ambience of an RPG village with sampled JRPG music to it. So It's kind of like a new subgenre of Mallsoft. It's like, hey, you're hanging out in an RPG town. You can buy items and hang around in the market and talk to villagers.
But how abandoned is
it? It's not abandoned at all. It's actually, there's a lot of crowd sounds in it.
Have they at least teched up to neon?
No. It is very old school. I like that as well. But then when I listened to it, I had no idea what I would talk about it because it's like, sampled JRPG music with crowd sounds.
So good, though.
It is very good. But it is. This album has a lot more happening in it. So, yeah, he, Quip, has coined a new term to describe his music because as genre is a marketing term. So he calls it night rock, like knight as in an armored warrior. Yeah, so this album is also brief, about 30 minutes or so, but way closer to synthwave and synthpop and a bit of chiptune than OST1.rar. I quite liked it. It was very upbeat, energetic, but not overly so. Like, a lot of synthwave is like really leaning in on the cocaine aesthetic, for lack of a better term. Okay. This was definitely not, this is not Hotline Miami type synthwave. This was, I don't know. What did you think, Burke?
Yeah, I really liked this album. It was like a really fun, I think the way I described it is that it's all really great compositions. And we could talk about individual tracks that are really, really great. But I really liked that this whole album was really good at two things. First of all, I think it was really good at conveying its inspirations without just copying the aesthetic directly or just sampling it. Of course, if there's anything wrong with sampling or Plunderphonics, we love that. But it is interesting that I kind of knew exactly what they were going for, even though it's not that. So it's very, very faithfully reprocessed. My second thought is that I really think this album does a really good job at like being cohesive in terms of that style and inspiration without feeling samey. Like, I never got bored listening to it. It never felt repetitive. Sometimes one thing that really can turn me off of like vaporwave, synthwave stuff is album structure can be a real problem. It can either be like two all over the place, or it's just like, here's 17 ideas that I had and I need to get an album out. Mm-hmm. Or it's all just like, here's the same song, but slightly different for 45 minutes. And this is just like a really well put together group of original compositions. And I had a question for you. So I noticed Equip has a bunch of albums under the Cursebreaker name. Is that like a series that he does?
Yeah. Like, he's really into creating a persona. You know, like the album art for this is very van art, idealized version picture of Kevin as like an armored warrior with a magic sword and lightning bolts are striking the sword. Also, he's in the clouds. So
And there's also that picture of him with like a horns and stuff. It's like one of his publicity pictures. It's awesome. It's an amazing picture.
Yeah. So he's really trying to build up this mythos of this Cursebreaker X. A lot of his releases are like singles from the album. And there's like a Cursebreaker Z, which is like lullabies of this type of music, of this album. So like remixing his own. He wants to fully explore this.
Yeah. And then there's a Cursebreaker Gaiden a few months ago. Mm-hmm. It's also in the Cursebreaker lineage.
Yeah. And the thing is, this is a more consistent album than OST1 because every single song feels like you're on this quest and you're adventuring, and there's not really any lo-fi elements of it. It's very cleanly produced. At least that was my impression. But I mean, compared to OST, like almost everything feels more cleanly produced.
It's also, 5 years newer, right? So
yeah,
they come from different eras. But yeah, I definitely get what you're saying.
There is some varieties like track two, which is the shop new inventory. Mm-hmm. I quite enjoy that. That's more mellow. It's very kind of Muzak-y a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree. Got a lot of the tracks are really good. Shadow Dancer is really good. Track seven.
Yeah. Well, in fact, why don't we play a sample? It's about 90 seconds in, and there's like a really cool bridge about there, and I quite like that. The only thing is, I guess it's sort of a pet peeve of mine, is like one of the later tracks is track 9 is labeled Perfect Harmonic Curse Breakers, parenthesis Final Boss. That was not Final Boss music, sir.
Final Boss pierced.
Yeah, I'm Final Boss. It needs to be more operatic.
Okay.
Need some chorus chanting about the doom, the prophesized ending of the world or something like that. I don't know. As an evil clown descends from the heaven to wreak vengeance.
I do think it's interesting that a lot of the music on this album, I don't know how much you care about like 16-bit chiptunes or whatever, but I grew up in a Genesis household. Okay. Not a brand warrior guy, but the Genesis had such a different set of soundtracks than the SNES, just by virtue of like they had different sound chips. I've mentioned this before. Genesis had like really interesting bass mimicking in its sound chip. So like a lot of its soundtracks are very funky. I always reference Streets of Rage 2 and Toe Jam and Earl. I think I probably have said that many times on this podcast at this point. Whereas SNES stuff was more like epic square wave type stuff. Mm-hmm. It occurred to me that I implicitly was thinking of the SNES, but they are really just inspired by 16-bit era. And there's a lot on this album that's like way funkier than I expected.
Yeah.
Like a lot of like interesting syncopated drum and bass parts behind all the melodies.
Yeah, a lot of this is really, I mean, I wouldn't even peg it as 16-bit. I would peg it more PS1 era music. And like, because I'm not an expert, but there are purists who are very particular about what you can and do. When you say 8-bit, you mean a very specific set of...
I have a friend like that.
But I mean, again, I think for Vaporwave that works because it's all about the fuzziness of nostalgic memories anyway. So whether it was a Super Nintendo game or Genesis or a PS1 game that you remember that soundtrack, it's all... far enough in the past, it's all the same, man.
You know, I agree. And that's the other thing I was thinking about this album is I don't really have like a strong connection to that era of video game music. I played those games as a kid, and I think the only soundtrack I really love is like Streets of Rage 2, like listen to a lot still. And that's not that they're not good. It's just not what I paid attention to when I was a kid. But it's interesting. It doesn't feel necessary to enjoy any of these albums, either one. I think they're intrinsically do a good enough job of being their own thing that even if you don't have that nostalgia, because I don't think I do, I might and just be in denial about it, or it's like buried way deep in the back of my brain. I really enjoyed both these albums without being like hyper obsessed about that era of video games.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, I haven't really played Final Fantasy. I never even beat Final Fantasy VII. I played a bit of it at a friend's house, but obviously I didn't beat it because... I didn't spend 100 hours at my friend's house monopolizing his PlayStation.
I guess I'm trying to separate out albums where nostalgia is like interesting versus a crutch.
You know, honestly, I've started listening to video game music for games I haven't even played. And I think that actually isn't super recent, but like there's something about the sense of adventure and just escapism that's really very strong in the JRPG feeling. And I think it's something I think a lot of people would respond to. And I think that's what this is about. It's, again, like, you know, we've mentioned this is music about the emotions of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to note that it's not just limited to JRPGs there, right? Like, it's like there's a lot of video game music and a lot of it is still structured similarly enough, like Diablo 2 music, I think, you know, as one example.
The listening to music for games you don't really play is an interesting point, because I actually had a period where Fez, FTL, and Undertale soundtracks were heavy in my like listen to while working rotation. And I didn't really play those games very much.
Yeah.
But all those soundtracks rule and like do perfectly encapsulate each of those games.
Oh, God, that's a really good point. So like Undertale in particular, I did beat the game once, but I did not beat it two more times that are not do the full pacifist genocidal route. Cause I looked up what you had to do for those. I was like, nope, that's way too much effort. I'll just watch a video of the ending. I don't care, but I love the soundtrack and I have listened to it quite a bit. And Undertale is sort of a really good example of this kind of evolution. And I think Equip is part of that same process of like introduced to this music from Final Fantasy, et cetera, and now has absorbed it and built upon it. So if you want to see where music is going in that direction, this is a good snapshot of it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's true.
So I think if you like synthwave and synthpop and vaporwave, like, this is a really good meeting point of all three of these genres. So give it a shot. Thanks for listening. This was a fun album. These were a fun episode to record, to meditate upon the influence of video game music. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/nightclerkradio. Please subscribe and help us pay our hosting costs and to keep, you know, Night Clerk Radio going. All of you who are patrons, thank you so much for your support. I think our next episode, we're going to have even more fun. Virk, do you want to introduce what we're talking about next episode?
Oh, sure. So we are talking about a band I love and that I actually wasn't sure if we'd ever get to them on the podcast, mm-hmm. but we are doing Godspeed You, Black Emperor, mm-hmm. the classic, geez, at this point, 25-year-old Canadian experimental music collaboration. They just do
post-rock, baby.
Post-rock. I love post-rock, and I'm glad we're getting to do it on the podcast. So we're both huge fans of the band. They just had an album come out a couple weeks ago, not even, and we're going to talk about it because it rules. It's going to be like a half-topic thing, just talking about Godspeed because they also are just great. They're one of my favorite bands. And then, yeah, we're going to talk about their new album.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with Godspeed You, Black Emperor. I was introduced to them. I remember it was the movie 28 Days Later. They're featured prominently in the soundtrack. And it was 28 Days Later is a great movie. And like the way the music synchronized with the action of the film was inspired. So I hunted them down and started listening to them.
Nice. And
so you can find us on Twitter at Night Clerk Radio. And I am at Ross Payton. And Burke is at Burke McBurkinson. So if you have questions or comments for us, feel free to ping us on the Twitters. We also have a website, nightclerkradio.com. We have a Facebook page. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies, tell strangers in the street. Go out and rant. Maybe your rants will be recorded by an avant-garde post-rock group and sampled for one of their albums.
We can only dream.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.